I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The 6 o'clock news from the BBC with Nicholas Witchell and Philip Hayton.
Good evening. The headlines at 6 o'clock. At least 13 dead. Damage running into millions of pounds. The chaos on the day a storm battered southern Britain without warning.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the greatest games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. My name is Marcus. Jonathan Wilson is sat opposite me. Lovely to have you here, Jonathan, as always.
Thank you very much.
And with us is Scott Murray, journalist and contributor to The Guardian, among others, and writer of The Title, A History of the Old First Division in England. Scott, pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for having me.
Scott, you have chosen an Old Firm derby from 1987. Some people may call it the Old Firm derby, from those times. Yeah. Rangers 2, Celtic 2. It was explosive stuff. It was described as a great shame by some people. So famous, infamous, all those kind of words can be used. Why have you gone for this one?
Because I think it's been slightly misrepresented in time. I mean, it was obviously a ludicrous rammy, and
that's putting it mildly.
The reputation it's got is fair enough on most respects, but it was also just a really entertaining football match as well, and it was good fun. And maybe I'm a little bit my view of the match is coloured a bit by the fact that I was watching it in the south of England, and this was a time where you couldn't get Scottish football on TV. In fact, there wasn't even English football, hardly any, on the telly at that point. So when this kicked off, it kind of had to, I had to get on the phone to my uncle in Aviemore and say, look, Andrew, will you tape Scott Sport tomorrow and post it down? And a couple of weeks later, I'd get this sort of grainy VHS tape.
You knew the score, though, by then, did you?
News had reached you.
We'd worked out the score, yeah. But well, this is the thing, because there was, like, a little clip of it on, like, the ITN news and not much else. And I thought, no, I have to see this whole thing. And it was a huge story in Scotland. And it was big in England, but no one had seen anything. So it had this, I don't know, it had this glamour. I don't know if people...
Mythical air about it as well, maybe.
Yeah, but I think there was a glamour about it because the English game at the time, I mean, the last two Liverpool teams that had won the championship, 84 and 86, weren't that exciting. I'll annoy a lot of people by saying the Everton team in 85, they were a great team, but they've not lived on that well in the memory, I don't think. You know, 87 Wayne Clark and, you know, 60-odd-year-old Paul Power. It's not, you know, it's not like real, you know, box office stuff. And at the same time, there was this sort of explosion going on in the Scottish League. And that was partly, obviously, to do with the Heysel ban. So Rangers,
well, the fact that Rangers have six English players in this game. Yeah, so the likes of Butcher and Woods would not have been there, I suspect, but for the fact they wanted to play European football.
I mean, I don't want to jump ahead too much. I find it incredible Trevor Francis is in there.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, a huge name in British football.
Well, past his best by then, probably, but still the point.
Yeah, exactly.
But he was still, I mean, if you watch even the highlights of this match, like Francis is in the middle of this melee, and it's like you've sort of, you know, dumped Byron in the middle of like a brawl in a Wetherspoons or, you know, Wordsworth on a Question Time panel or something. He's just completely out of place. And you think, what the?
Yeah.
And he's sort of wandering around in this very silky fashion, and there's just bedlam going on all around. And I love that about it too. But just the whole thing just seemed to sort of sparkle and shine in a way that English football wasn't at the time. Mm.
Well, I mean, do you think there's an argument this is the greatest time of Scottish football? You've had the period when Celtic and Rangers were not dominant, when you had Ferguson's Aberdeen and you had Dundee United. And those
two sides reaching European finals.
Yes,
in that period.
Yeah, really, really good teams, but and not the traditional teams. So there's sort of been this breaking up of the old firm. Mm-hmm. And this is, I guess, the context of this game is part of the process of Rangers re-establishing themselves and part of the Souness revolution. So Souness had come in the beginning of the previous season. You know, he'd left Liverpool, which again I think is probably Heysel ban related. Becomes player manager of Rangers.
Well, he'd been to Sampdoria.
In
between, yeah.
Goes to Rangers, player manager. And this is a Rangers team that when he takes them over has not won the league in 8 years, I think, and they'd won three of the previous 22.
Yeah, it was
which for one of the great teams, or one of the great clubs, is a remarkable period of failure.
He won the league, though, in that season.
He didn't win hearts and minds, though, did he?
Yeah, I don't think he was too worried about that, certainly.
Do you want to talk about Souness's approach?
I mean, well, yeah. But I mean, he came in. I think the point you made about the everyone keeps saying, "Oh, it wasn't, you know, it was their first title since 1978." But I think the other statistic you mentioned is the real eye opener, the one that's like 20 odd years that only won two or three league titles. But there was still this idea, you know, even though Ferguson's Aberdeen were the dominant force, and there was Dundee United, there was still this idea that it was the duopoly. It was still the old firm ruled over everything. But Rangers just really hadn't contributed to the story at all. And it, you know, and back then they couldn't excuse it on liquidation. It was just the fact that they were always second best to Celtic, but then they were, you know, third, fourth, fifth down the league. This was something that just didn't happen in Scottish football. Rangers had been the dominant force for
so long. Debut as player manager against Hibs, commits perhaps the worst tackle I've ever seen.
Well, he got the wrong guy.
Yeah, he got McCluskey and he was going after Beadle. Is that the guy he was trying to guess?
Yes, or was it the other way around?
McCluskey's the guy who gets done, definitely.
I think it was right. So, but just by the fact that he got he spotted the wrong mullet.
Yeah. I mean, in the 80s, that was a problem, wasn't it?
Ali McCoy's hair in this game is something quite special on that theme.
McCoy's usually had pretty good hair, I have to say, when he was a player.
So Souness gets sent off on his debut against Hibs, leaving a 21-man brawl behind him.
The thing about that is the way he sort of once the deed was done, he just sort of calmly walked away, and there's this sort of nuclear Armageddon.
But it's quite like the Hollywood hero, isn't it, who sets fire to the building, walks off, and the explosion happens as they calmly, you know, they don't duck for cover. It just as if it's
Or like John Wayne at the end of the Searchers.
My work here is done, sort of thing. And but in Souness's...
And then he rounds off the season, celebrates the title by getting sent off at Pittodrie as well.
But that's the odd thing. He does feel like my work here is done. I wanted to make the players have a bit more fight and all that kind of stuff, and he certainly achieved that.
Well, I mean, his philosophy at Liverpool, in the great Liverpool sides of the late 70s, early 80s, was, you know, you come and play us at football, we'll beat you at football. If you really want to turn this into a scrap, okay, you know, let's go. Mm. And we'll win at that as well. And it was usually...
Oh, he wasn't fussy,
It was usually always down to Souness. I think one of the problems when he got to Rangers, it was exactly the same. I mean, he wasn't going to change his philosophy. It was like, you know, one way or the other, but either way, we're going to assert ourselves and, you know, Rangers will win. The problem was the team wasn't as good. So he was also a bit older and just that split second behind.
Yeah. Well, because going into that game against Celtic in...
So Rangers win the league. So Celtic respond to that by sacking Davy Hay.
Yeah.
And they bring back Billy McNeil, who's not a man who's ever going to take a backward step.
But that's maybe one of the reasons why they brought in Billy McNeil.
Oh, sure it is. It's
a counter move, really.
Yeah. Fight the hard man with another very, very
fighting
hard man.
Fighting Graeme Souness with fire, I suppose, is the old expression.
Well, also, the weird thing about that, looking back, at the time it was seemed very odd, because McNeil is just coming off his double relegation whammy in England with City and Villa. So he's kind of, although he's obviously still a legend and he's won titles already in Scotland as a manager, he's kind of a little bit tainted goods now. And they've just got rid of, well, I say got rid of, McClare's gone to United, Mojo off, I forget where he went. Was that
went
when he went
France
over to
Nantes?
Nantes. And of course would go back to Glasgow. Quietly under a bushel.
His story is yet to come to its conclusion. It's quiet diminuendo. And I think Alan McAnally had gone.
And Billy McNeil famously, when asked about all his about, just went, "Who is McAnally? I've never heard of him." As he goes, he joined Bayern, didn't he then? Or did he go to Villa then Bayern?
That's a good question.
Anyway, the point is...
He moved on to...
A superb centre forward. Brilliant, pretending never to have heard of.
that's a sort of the backdrop of it. So the league campaign gets underway. So what's the kind of the build-up? Because as I say, this game happened in October, so you've had a few months of the season already. Rangers are champions, but Celtic, under Billy McNeil... They're thinking to themselves, hang on, we've got a real chance to win the title back.
And they're 4 points clear when the game begins. So I guess from Rangers' point of view, they can't afford to lose this game. They can't let that gap become six.
Yeah. I mean, Rangers had started fairly slowly, a couple of draws, defeat. Celtic had come out the traps. Andy Walker was new and was doing pretty well. I think McGee as well was scoring a few.
Another man with a temper.
Frank McAvenny.
And so they bought McAvenny, and there'd already been one Old Firm game this year, and Souness had managed to get himself sent off in that one as well. So it sort of begs the question: what would happen if Souness was was in midfield for this match? But luckily he wasn't.
It's an unbelievably good midfield, given that Souness wasn't there. Mm. In fact, you have Derek Ferguson, who... I mean, I confess I have a big soft spot for him from his time at Sunderland when he was let down by being surrounded by rubbish other players. And for a man whose key job is, or key skill is the ability to play simple passes to bring other players into play. Yeah, he's sort of a lubricant in midfield. But no point lubricating shit players, but lubricating Ian Durant is very much worth it.
Yeah,
and John McGregor, the other midfielder, and I mean Davy Cooper on the bench.
Yeah,
because they've got Falco on the left rather than him. So yeah, that was the thing. So when I started watching the game again to sort of refresh myself, and I hadn't looked at the teams, I was sort of shocked by just how many good players are there.
Yeah, on both sides as well. I mean, it was nice to see big Mick McCarthy at the back for Celtic as well.
Richard Gough playing at right back for Rangers. I guess it was just in terms of Scottish football, it was a different era that that they had some really, really good footballers.
Indeed.
There.
All right, we're going to go for a quick break, and after which we will talk about that explosive Old Firm derby. See you in a moment.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, gentlemen, let's get into the 90 minutes then, because there's an awful lot to talk about. Scott, take it away.
Well, it kind of, the stakes were raised pretty much from the off. And I think was it McCarthy or was it Burns?
Tommy Burns, if you're talking about the internet, I think you're talking about Tommy Burns lifts a cross in.
From the left.
Overhits it.
Yeah. Mm. And Woods threatens to do a bit of a Jordan Pickford and bat it back to McAvaney, who's moving in. But but he collects the ball, but McAvaney
He pushes it over.
He pushes it over the bar.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But he does a full Nat Lofthouse McAvaney.
Yes.
On Woods.
And Woods, to his credit, appears totally unflustered by it at that point.
But it was a hard enough hit, I think, that it would have
yeah,
registered.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Woods
it was, yeah.
You know, that one would have been remembered for what was soon to happen. And what soon happened was it was a kind of a melee out of nothing, wasn't it?
Morris gets away down the right. So the Celtic fullback gets away down the right, puts in a low cross. Jimmy Phillips sort of half blocks it, and the ball sort of trickles to Woods, who just bends down and picks it up.
Mm.
And at that point, it seems like a pretty banal bit of play. But then...
Well, then McAvaney sort of arrives on the scene late, puts his boot in... to which Woods, like, especially after what had gone before, but certainly even, I think, on its own merits, you know, was within his rights to take umbrage. So he gets up and sort of, you normally say people gently cup things, don't they? This was like more of a, he cupped McAvaney's face, but like he meant it. At which point it all kicked off. McAvaney, you know, tried to come back. Terry Butcher came in, you know, full Glasgow bouncer mode, shove in the chest, get away.
Butcher doesn't need an invite for that kind of thing.
Not really, no. And they were all beginning to come together, and this is kind of what makes it like such an egregious act, but an act of sort of strange beauty as well, was Roberts just like slipping in at the side. A neat little jab to poor McAvaney's Cooper. And then he just sidled away. And it was almost like a sort of magic trick where there was this big misdirection going on somewhere else. And Roberts just came in, job done.
Because Roberts was the one who did him.
Yeah.
And Roberts gets away scot-free.
From that bit, yeah.
Yeah,
because McAvaney goes down, and I have to say, when I first saw it, even though I knew sort of what had happened, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, McAvaney was just acting up. It wasn't actually anything. And then I see the replay from the other angle. Yeah. Like, oh, Roberts has just punched him.
Yeah. Because Woods has a bit of a nibble. I mean, Chris Woods didn't, it's a bit of a cliche thing, he doesn't strike me as that type of player, really, to get involved in a bit of the trouble. When you mentioned, you know, McAvaney get involved in Butcher and all these people, you think, well, that makes sense. But it seemed unlike Woods to do that. But then the referee comes over after a little bit of time.
A huge amount of time.
And then...
he's been writing a 1,000-word essay.
Seems to take an age.
And that's what I absolutely love about this. In the midst of this chaos,
yeah,
you know, one of the most anticipated games for years, yeah, incredible tension in the crowd. There's been this kind of pretty significant melee.
We're only 17 minutes in,
We're only 17 minutes in. And there's Jim Duncan... with his notebook, writing kind of, and just keeping on, and nobody's crowding around him, but just letting him write. Mm. And then...
he's the calmest man in the stadium, which is normally what you want for a referee, but he's too calm.
A good sort of 30 seconds, 40 seconds later, he finally shows a red card to McAvaney.
Yeah.
And the brilliant thing is Chris Woods' reaction.
Yeah.
Because Chris Woods sort of grabs the back of his own head in shock.
He seems gutted.
He can't quite believe it. And then you see the realisation dawn on him. Oh, God, if he's gone, so have I. But it takes another 30 seconds of writing in his notebook.
Well, you see the Rangers fans start celebrating because McAvaney's gone and taunting the Celtic fans because they're thinking, all right, you know, off he goes. And then, as you say, 30 or 40 seconds later, eventually Woods gets the red card and the Celtic fans' reactions, suddenly they start taunting the Rangers fans. It's a remarkable... I implore anybody to look at this on YouTube.
And people say VAR slowed the game down.
Mr Duncan slowed down the game that day. So Woods is sent off. Rangers don't have a goalkeeper on the bench.
And then Butcher gets himself booked, seemingly not for the shove, but for dissent. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but it appears that it's his reaction to Woods being sent off.
Yeah, so Butcher gets booked. Roberts goes in goal.
Well, I mean, just to say...
Oh, sorry, yeah.
No, it's just that. I assume that you're right about that, that it's for dissent, just purely because it's Woods and McAvaney who get themselves sent off.
Yeah.
And without question, they were the two who contributed the least...
Yeah, they were the instigators, but...
To
but
this.
Yeah.
I mean, if Butcher hadn't come in and it wouldn't have quite kicked off in the way that it did. And I sometimes wonder whether Woods got sent off for Butcher's shove.
Right.
Which would then explain why
if Butcher was just sort of seen two play square, off, one goes down, I'll send off one from each and that'll do.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's in order of level of offence, number one by some margin, Roberts.
Yeah.
Number two, Butcher.
Yeah.
And then joint third, yeah. McAvaney and Woods.
I mean, you could even argue it's not the worst thing Roberts did that afternoon. We'll move on to that. Yeah, so Roberts goes in goal.
He used his hands to good effect from start to finish.
My goodness, so Roberts goes in goal.
Well, and that's a strangely beautiful moment when Chris Woods, kind of, as he's jogging off, looking slightly confused, stops to take off his shirt. And he's got a very sort of... it's very 80s muscle, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's the kind of body that all teenagers have now because everybody spends all the time in the gym. But at the time, it's like, my God, look at this Adonis. That's incredible.
Yeah. So not long after
that... It was a lovely homoerotic moment in the middle of all this sort of
absolutely.
Overly macho...
And every good Old Firm derby has
needs
one, or certainly needs one.
Yeah, yeah.
So not long after that, Celtic take the lead.
Yes.
So they go 1-0 up, and...
That's a lovely goal. It's a really nice finish from Walker. Mm-hmm. I have a sense that almost all goals in the late 80s looked a bit like that. A ball over the top, forward running on, nice neat finish.
And that run, that celebratory run as they score and then the run kind of...
Yeah, because they're always making a run
movement.
On an angle so they can keep...
Exactly. Yeah. It's poetry in motion, you could argue. So Celtic go ahead and... They go 2-0 up, and
which is a ball over top from Mick McCarthy.
Yeah,
Terry Butcher under pressure ends up lobbing the ball over Roberts.
If anything, you're thinking it can't go much worse for Rangers. The goalkeeper sent off. They got an outfield player in goal. Well, then Butcher. I mean,
it should be said neither of the goals are Roberts' fault.
No,
I mean possibly a proper goalkeeper might have been a bit nearer the first one, but it's a really good finish.
But he saved a one-on-one.
Yeah, he had saved 1-1. That's true, actually.
Just before that, he stood up and made...
deflected it wide from Peter Grant, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. But yeah, so Butcher, in defending, tries to kind of presumably knock the ball out for a corner or whatever, and ends up perfectly lobbing his own goalkeeper to make it 2-0 to Celtic. I mean, it's another calamitous moment in the game. And it, what was that, after about 36 minutes? Mm. Rangers are down and they're looking pretty out of it. We move into the second half and then... Butcher, of course, he's already on a booking. You know, he just can't help himself with the, in the climate. Gets himself sent off for, was it a shove?
Well, no, there's a cross comes in from the right, and Butcher jumps with McKnight, the Celtic keeper.
That's right, yeah.
As if it's a foul, but nothing really in it. You know, he's challenged slightly over aggressively for the ball. Kind of thing happens a dozen times a game. But as they both go down, he has a little bit of a nibble on the ground.
That's right,
and. Gets a straight red. It's not a second yellow. It's a straight red, and Mr. Duncan writes another 500-word essay. And at this point, you're thinking 2-0, man up. This is Celtic about to win the title because it's going to get 6 points clear here, and even in October, that's going to be enough.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So Rangers were dead and buried, Scott.
I know. So 6 points clear when it's 2 points for win. Yeah.
Rangers are surely dead and buried. They're 2-0 down. They're down to 9 men. Celtic are down to 10 men. They have that one man advantage.
Well, and the sort of idea slowly germinating that, like, this sort of soonest revolution might just be like a one season flash in the pan. And, you know, because they had been talked up at the start of the season as the team that were going to go and win the title, and Celtic were kind of in a bit of a mess. But here's Celtic, as you say, about to go way clear in the league with just a couple of months gone. And it's 2-0 at half time. Then they've got Butcher sent off. But then McCoist rocks up with I think, a fantastic goal.
Yeah. I mean, it's only 3 minutes after the red card. So it's almost immediate that they get back into it.
And what I really liked about it is that when it goes in, and it's equally as good a goal as, I think, Walker. Does Walker tuck his into the bottom right and. But McCoist gets his off the left-hand post, and it's a really nice finish. He doesn't do any of this sort of very pious thing of rushing into the net to grab the ball, frowning, running back to the... yeah. He's away down the wing, giving it all wagging finger.
With his mullet bouncing behind him.
And I love that as well, that just like he was lost in the moment of scoring the goal, and
it was something crazy, like his 15th goal of the season already.
he was
phenomenal. I mean, he didn't score many goals for Sunderland, but as soon as he got back to his level,
but you've been waiting all show to say that, by the way.
Well, I mean, we should say it's a beautiful goal because Ferguson, yeah, sort of great feet and great balance to sort of. Win the ball from a bit of a sort of bit of a mess in the middle, advances with it, plays it inside to Richard Gough. What on earth is he doing?
Gough's on the wander.
Yeah, the right back playing sort of as number 10.
Yep.
He then plays this beautifully controlled pass into McCoist cutting in from the left. And then, yeah, great finishing off the left-hand post.
But it was funny how that changed the atmosphere. Because the Rangers fans then, they celebrated it as if it was like an equaliser or almost to put them in front. They're still 2-1 down with one man less on the pitch. So even with that goal going in, it's still... And they still have Roberts in goal, for crying out loud.
The thing is that as wild as the match had been up to and including the point Butcher got himself sent off, I think it'll have been forgotten pretty quickly. It's the last bit. You know, there would have been a bit of press about it or whatever, but it wouldn't be something we're talking about 30 years down the line. You also needed this ludicrous footballing story as well. And what remained wasn't solely a footballing story, but in the context of the actual match itself, the fact that they're launching this 2-goal comeback with 9 men, with a non-goalie, with a clown in goal. and you know, they managed to turn it round. And that, and the context of the season and what have you, it needed that bit as well to become, well, it's why I think it's a classic. I think people do think this is a classic.
Oh, it is.
But just not necessarily with such love and affection.
And Celtic very nearly go 3-1 up. Billy Stark has this beautiful looping header that hits the woodwork.
Well, I think as well, it's that very rare thing. It's a sort of burst of Graham Roberts positivity. is when the ball comes. I mean, Roberts is beating all ends up. He's just rooted to the spot, but the ball comes twanging back. That header comes twanging back off the crossbar, and he just plucks it out there.
Yeah, he does. Nonchalant,
as though nothing has happened. Mm-hmm. And there's not long to go. And I think that's just one of those things that it just sent, because the atmosphere was kind of crazy at the moment. It just sent that thing. It was like, come on, we can do this. We're not 3-1 down. This is still.
Yeah.
There's still a goal in this. And it was, you know, because the same thing happened. Well, not the same thing happened, but Roberts had the ball in his hands in the build-up to the very late equaliser.
Yeah, it's a goal kick.
Yeah,
which is actually a terrible goal kick he takes. but you're right. He runs so isn't it?
But so it still has that feeling that something could happen.
The commentator, I think, is Jock Brown.
Yes.
Yeah. Suggests the Celtic players deliberately put the ball out for a goal kick to waste a bit of time. If you're going to do that, don't lob it onto the top of the net with a miss hit cross.
Yeah, but that's Jock.
Belt it into the Celtic fans.
You're trying to get into the mind of Jock Brown, Jonathan. I think we should stop short there.
But so Roberts takes the goal kick. It falls short, but thankfully it falls to Ferguson, who you know, controls it well, plays the ball out to the right to Durant. Mm. He breaks down the right, he crosses
it's a,
it.
It's a lovely run as well.
Like yeah, really his initial cross is headed clear. He picks up the loose ball again.
Another goal.
And then crosses. And McKnight fulfills every stereotype you want of a Satan Greavesy Scottish keeper. Flaps at it.
McKnight was Northern Irish, was he?
Yes, he was, actually. That's true. Yeah, sorry.
That would have been enough for Greavesy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
He's playing for a Scottish team.
Sure.
McKnight spills it and... Richard Gough hooks it over the line.
Richard
2-2.
Gough, the man of the moment. I mean, I find it incredible, the build-up of that goal. And that's what it meant when McCoy scored and the atmosphere changed. Every time Graham Roberts caught the ball, the fans celebrated, as if to say, you haven't scored another goal. Like, you know, football fans will cling on to any victory. And then it's true. When Roberts gets that ball, as you say, but to do that kick out, which eventually leads to the goal, he sort of jumps up and catches it. And the Rangers fans, as if they're a goal ahead, Celtic are chasing, and they've just thwarted another attack. And then they go and equalise, and it's pandemonium in the home end. I mean, it's such a bizarre kind of chain of events from the emotions of those Rangers fans, who presumably thought, well, we're not going to get a point, so we might as well try and celebrate whatever we can. And yet there they go up the other end, and Richard Gough, who had a knack of scoring against Celtic in some of the bigger games, certainly at Ibrox, stabs home the equaliser.
Yeah.
And that's not even the end of it.
If only it was.
Well, as well, I wonder, though, whether, like, the fans, exactly what they were celebrating, because I sort of think there was a two- or three-stage thing going on where they were just lost in the moment. It was just the context of an Old Firm game.
But
firstly, it's a last-minute equaliser. You celebrate those with anyone.
Of course.
Then it's against Celtic. Then you've got, you know, you're playing a man down and you've got Coco and goal. It's, you know, and then you're still in the title race. That it was looking, you know, as if they'd stumbled behind, because Hearts were going well that season as well, weren't they? So, I mean, it didn't feel as though it was just going to be a two-horse race. So there was a lot of celebration going on, and then...
too much celebration.
Yeah.
So it starts off with a fairly aimless ball over the top towards Owen Archdeacon. Mm-hmm. Roberts gathers cleanly. And then decides that he will initiate contact with Archdeacon so he can throw himself to the ground, presumably with half a thought of getting Archdeacon sent off, but mainly just to waste time.
It was a really poor dive as well.
Yeah.
There was a good couple of seconds between.
Yeah, there was never a second's thought that Archdeacon might be in trouble for that.
No.
It was teetering on Rivaldo-esque.
And also, like, Archdeacon was there, you know, looking like a sane gun. I honestly didn't, you know, again, amongst all this nonsense, I've got to do anything. And you just for a minute looked like such a young, like a little boy.
Yeah.
So there's another delay. Roberts gets to his feet. The Rangers fans are still going mad. And he starts conducting them, singing the sash.
Oh, dear.
Marvellous.
Oh, dear, Roberts. Well, yeah, and so that obviously goes on. The Rangers fans are singing that song, and as you say, Roberts conducts it. The game eventually finishes. But, of course, the ramifications of this game is that four of them end up in the courtroom because of this, because they are accused of breaching the peace. So you've got Butcher, Roberts, of course, for his part on it, McAvenny, and Chris Woods.
Chris Woods.
Now, if I'm right in saying, Woods and McAvenny are proved not guilty.
No.
Sorry.
Woods and Butcher are both convicted and fined. I think Butcher got £500 fine and Woods £250. Roberts is found not proven. Which is genuinely extraordinary.
Sorry, yeah, even having just read that before we came into the studio, I'm thinking to myself, nah, I must have read that wrong. Surely Roberts, but he did.
I mean,
so he wasn't proved innocent. It was just not proven.
Yeah, all we can say legally is he was waving his hands in a way that very unfortunately happened to coincide to the rhythm
with a lusty rendition of the sash my father wore. I mean, I wonder, there was that incident maybe about a decade later when Gazza was there.
Yes.
And McCoist had said, or Gazza had just turned up at Ibrox, and McCoist said to him, hey, I'll tell you what will get you in. When you first score a goal, go and pretend to play the flute in front of the fans. And he did it. And obviously, Gazza didn't know, and McCoist later said that he knew Gazza didn't know, which is why he just wanted to get him into trouble. Roberts was, more likely to have had a rough idea who was being sung there, I think.
And McAvenny was found not guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Celtic went on to win.
What do you think that tells you about Masonic influence over the Scottish court?
Well, I'd like to distance myself from any kind of chat around there. But so the game finished 2-2. Rangers amazingly got a point. But incredibly enough, Celtic went on to win the league. Rangers finished third. Hearts finished second.
Yeah, Celtic won the league by 12 points. Yeah. So 12 points ahead of Rangers.
So it's an interesting, because probably they had so many players suspended and all the rest of it. So oddly, despite that rousing comeback, and it would have been treated as a great victory, really, in the context of it, they actually sort of finished the season on a bit of a whimper, finishing third.
Yeah, ultimately it was all for nothing. But
then the following season is the beginning of 9 in a row and...
Yeah. And also, I mean, memorable football matches are not necessarily about the winners, the prizes. I mean, I have this sort of theory. Well, it's not much of a theory. It's just an opinion that this match, although it's an Old Firm game and it means so much to both sets, that it really was just about Rangers. It was just about their sort of this psychodrama of the Souness era. Celtic were almost like bystanders. They were almost dragged into this rather than, just the usual Old Firm back and forth. And Rangers are... Specifically the Souness Rangers until he left for, left for Liverpool, so what, 85 to 91 or 92. It's that period that people remember, I think, as being this sort of great, not necessarily a great team, because they clearly weren't, a great side, but such a great story.
Mm.
But, Celtic still won a couple of leagues in the middle of it all.
Mm-hmm. But it was never a dull moment, though, was it? As it seldom is when the Old Firm are
exactly. I mean,
involved.
If you were in that stand at the Broomloan stand,
where
just basically everything happened apart from the conducting, you got your value for money.
Yeah.
It'd been like about £4 or something as well.
Yeah. Blimey. Scott, it's been a pleasure talking to you about that Old Firm game. Thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Jonathan, a pleasure as always. Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. The latest issue of The Blizzard, issue 34, is now available, so do go to theblizzard.co.uk. And we shall see you next time.
was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.